You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
Welcome to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. This is Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. And I really am loving doing this because I am just getting great guests these days. And my guest today is one that you are likely to have heard of. He is standing for Senate. You are the U.S. Senate for the great state of Georgia, but that's probably not why or how you know him. You probably know him from his great and regularly posted YouTube videos, drive time. I can't say it like he says it. I'm going to introduce him as Derek Grayson, but you might know him as TMOT. TMOT, the Minister of Truth, welcome to the Blue Republican Radio Show.
Robin, it's a pleasure to be here on the Blue Republican Radio Show. Thank you for the invite.
You bet. Well, you know, we have a couple of mutual friends, and when two or three mutual friends say, you know, you really should get TMOT on the show, and then one of them carries a message and gets back to me that you would be up for doing it, then that's obviously an opportunity I want to take. And also, you know what, I want to thank you personally, not only for your service to the country, for your years in the Navy, but also for your service to the country during the run-up to the last presidential election. That was when I was getting heavily involved in politics and supporting Ron Paul, as you were. And, you know, I really appreciate the message you were sending out, as I now appreciate the message that you're sending out as part of your campaign for Senate down there in Georgia.
You're quite welcome, Robin. I'm glad to do it.
Well, we're glad to have you doing it. You know, you're obviously a man of passion, and you are a patriot. The love of people and the love of country kind of comes through everything that I've seen you do. So not only do I like that, I'm sure it's going to make good radio. So as I say, welcome to the show. Now, when we spoke briefly yesterday when we were organizing this, TMOT, you said you would like to talk about division. And I'm a political writer. I write a lot about how, on the one hand, the political duopoly, and on the other hand, the mainstream, especially the mainstream media, like to keep us divided in how they do that. And I know this is something that's dear to your heart and that you've thought a lot about. So I really want to just, you know, throw this floor over to you for the next hour, because you have a perspective on these things that, you know, culturally are very different from mine. You know, I'm a middle-class white Anglo guy who immigrated from England. I've never been to Georgia. Let's go with this. Okay. What is the message that you think we need to be proclaiming and hearing now about how this country is divided?
Well, many of us, and I've talked about this time and time again, there are a lot of things that amazes me that many people cannot see, even people from my own generation, that does not get it. And a lot of folks think that, you know, oh man, that just cannot be real. But, you know, when I remind people of things that, and these are some things that people might not, they don't like to hear about because it's ugly. But people in our government engaged and promoted the practice of slavery. This was people in government. And there are people in government with that same mentality. It's just that some things have become unacceptable. So what do? They find other ways to make them acceptable. Experimenting on the Tuskegee Airmen, for instance, giving them venereal diseases. These are things that our government was capable of doing. The first school shooting, Kent State. When the FBI raided David Koresh's compound. So our government, that mentality, that disdain for the Constitution, that is a mindset that still exists within our government. The very audacity, the hubris that they think that they can spy on us. And when a man exposes criminal activity, Edward Snowden, mm-hmm. he is now treated as a criminal for exposing that criminal behavior. So I say all of that to set up the stage that our government, yes, they are capable of doing some dastardly things. They have single-handedly, through liberal Democratic promoted policies, destroyed the almost the whole of the black family structure through the welfare state. It is no accident, and you can even ask Ayn Rand about that. I think she talks about it. Through social engineering, we have generations of black families, grandmother, great-grandmother, daughter, granddaughter, that come up through the welfare state.
Yeah.
And I've often stated the great experiment worked on the black community. We got Native Americans on reservations. Well, who else is left? The rest of America. Well, who is the rest of America, the bulk of it? White Americans. And what are one of the things that they want to do? Systematically attack the Second Amendment to strip them of their guns. So without going into a whole lot of detail on that, because I've got a ton of videos on that stuff, and this is all low-hanging fruit, what they need to make that possible is division. The arm of the government that they utilize for that is the fourth branch, which is the corporate media. There used to be a time in this country when we went through a period of yellow press, garbage news just to sell papers. And then, you know, people got high on the horse about the freedom and free press and wanted to bring press to the people that was unbiased, fair, and balanced, whatever. That has died. Most of our media outlets are owned by corporations. Well, what do corporations do? They manipulate politics. How do they manipulate politics? Lobbyists. What do lobbyists do? They funnel money to politicians. What do politicians do? They accept that money. They get elected, reelected time and time again, mm-hmm. and they do the biddings of the one percenters. Again, this is not conspiracy. You can just follow what I call the circle of loot, L-O-O-T, and you see what I'm talking about. The corporations invest in the politicians. The politicians take that money. They raise those millions. They spend it in advertising to reach the people with BS policies, and when they spend it in that advertising is spent with these media outlets. Who own the media outlets? The very corporations that gave the money to the politicians via the PACs and super PACs in the first place. So that's the circle of loot. So what are the primary things that they use to divide us with? Race is the primary one. They want blacks constantly blaming white Republicans. They want white middle class blaming blacks and immigrants that utilize the welfare state, the benefits of the welfare state. But what we all fail to realize, both parties are complicit in this engineering, and I call them the royals, and they exist within both parties. And they keep us divided on race, sex, sexual orientation, religion, wherever possible. And as long as we're divided, we are not focused on the things that we should be focused on. And that which is the most egregious is the violation, the erosion of our constitutional protections and our civil liberties. These are the things that are being taken away from us daily, and we're too busy fighting each other to recognize this. And what is amazing to me, a young lady posted some stuff about Nicki Minaj, saying that she had done more for black people than Martin Luther King and that he was a criminal and et cetera, et cetera. And everybody was all up and, oh, how could she say such a thing? And I said, she's no different than the people who keep reelecting the same politicians that are robbing us of our constitutional protections and our civil liberties on a daily basis. So She wasn't educated, and most of you are miseducated because you believe all of the BS coming out of both major parties. And the major parties have positioned this country to where we think that there are only two parties, an R and a D, and nothing else matters. Rarely do you find third-party candidates winning anything, and one would probably never be president. I think they learned that after Abraham Lincoln, who was a third-party candidate, won the Republican nomination. We haven't seen that since then. But I digress. I think you get the point. So it's necessary to keep us divided so that we don't focus on what's really going on. And if I've got time, I want to just give you a couple of classic examples, stuff that just happened recently. One, I'm going to talk about the military. That was a bill to expand education, health care, aftercare for military, the troops. That was, for the most part, thwarted by the Republican Party.
Wow. You know, Seymour, we're actually going in the break, so let's carry on after the break with this one.
Sure.
No Thanks problem. A lot. Appreciate it. With T-Mot. T-Mot, you were on a roll there. You were on a roll for that whole first segment, and when we ended that first segment, you were beginning to talk about a couple of bills. Please just go right ahead.
Okay. So we have this bill in the Senate to give better aid to our service members, education, health care, and things of that nature. And for the most part, it was thwarted by Republicans, Senate Republicans. And it was presented that way in the press. But see, here's what we don't know. So we got all these people mad with Senate Republicans. The reason they were voting against it is because what was stripped out was sanctions against Iran. And they wanted that. And because the Democrats didn't want that in there, the Republicans decided not to vote for the bill. This is a tactic that is used by both sides. It is calculated. They know what they're doing when they do it. They didn't want to pass the bill in the first place. There ought to be a constitutional amendment that any bills going across the floor be singular issue items, especially of such a major significance as to how we treat our troops. And we just heard about the second shooting out there in Fort Hood. And from what I understand, this guy was a part of some new medical program. Whatever happened to just getting the guy a good doctor to treat him, seems to me like they just wound him up and set him loose. And this is what we end up with. When we started the debates, I was the only person highlighting the fact that we treat our troops in a deplorable fashion, and now that has become one of the talking points in the debates. And my opponents are now saying they care about the troops. But if you go back and listen to the debates, which I record all of them in place, put them online, you won't hear that. Another example from one of the debates. Now the first one is the classic press pitting everybody against Senate Republicans as though they don't care about the troops, when in fact it was the Democrats that calculatedly knew that by stripping out those sanctions, what the reaction from the Republicans were going to be. And then Republicans could have just ate crow and went ahead and signed it anyway, but they didn't, because neither side wanted it to pass. So both have a reason that they can use and say why they didn't pass that bill. Because they don't give a damn about the troops, but they keep us divided over these issues. So now we got somebody to fight in the 2014 elections. Now, here's another one. On the stage, in the closing, in our last debate in Savannah, one of my opponents, Art Gardner, decided to say there were only two people qualified to run. Him along with David Perdue. He said, you don't want to elect these other four people that have already been in politics because they didn't do anything then, and you don't want a convicted felon. Now, everybody knew, well, he's got to be talking about the black guy, which is myself, and it was a bold-faced lie. I was pardoned, which means I am not a convicted felon because I received a pardon. So the man got on stage and lied. Secondly, in my closing, I said, yes, I was once convicted felon, but I was pardoned. And I said, one of the reasons why I'm in this fight is because I know what it is to lose your liberties and your freedom, because I lost mine, and that is why the Constitution is so near and dear to me. And when I did what I did, I violated no one else's civil liberties or their freedoms, only my own. And this is why you can count on me to fight dearly for your civil liberties and freedoms. Now, check out how the press presented this. The press presented it as though I just got up on stage and said, hey, y'all, I'm a convicted felon. Which is not the case at all, nor did they mention the fact that I am not a convicted felon by virtue of the fact that I received a pardon. Secondly, they did not mention that Art Gardner brought that up. They wanted it to seem as though that's one of my talking points, and that was the most important thing that I said in the debate. Why? Because the press have their marching orders, their corporate marching orders of who it is they need to continue to prop up and who it is they need to ignore and denigrate. Now comes stage two. Mr. Perdue, who they are now touting as the front runner, one of the front runners, makes a comment about Karen Handel only being a high school graduate. These things are too complicated for somebody with just a high school education. And I've lived in other countries, so I know what it is. The press have been pounding him to death with that. Now, his statement was elitism, period. And I'll tell him to his face, he had no business making such a statement, because if that were going to be the case, I think it's either Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, one of them dropped out of college and made a hell of a lot more money than David Perdue. So what does that say about David Perdue with his college education? So you see my point, but mm-hmm. The press ain't bringing that up, but they want to create a divide between those that don't have college educations and maybe even dropped out of school versus the rich and the wealthy. Why? So that we have class warfare division going. So they're focusing on everything that David Perdue said when he was talking to a particular group, but yet they ignore what Art Gardner said about me. That was a bold-faced lie. And Karen Hamill doesn't deny the fact that she only has a high school education, but at the same time, that doesn't mean she's any less qualified to go and run for Senate. So these are the types of tactics that the press will play to promote the picks that the Royals have decided they want to win. And what people need to understand about the Royals, through PACs and super PACs, they fund both sides. Mm-hmm. Why? No matter who wins, they still win, because they funded both sides. If you look at the people that fund these politicians, you will see some of the same donors on both sides of the aisle. And that is how they are able to have the lowest rating, approval ratings in history, yet continue to be reelected time and time again, and have the audacity to want a promotion to go from Congress to the Senate. And that is the nature of what we're dealing with.
If these statists are getting so much support from a corrupt press, why do they keep winning?
That's the reason.
Why do they keep winning with such an low approval? Why do we disapprove of them so much after we elect them? Do you see what I mean?
Because the people who are actually going out and voting, now this is going to be a hard truth to hear. Okay, this is going to make some people mad, but it is what it is. It is the same mentality that has black people locked into the liberal Democratic Party. There are people that voted for Obama simply because he's black. And there are folk that are going to vote Republican. It don't matter how good of a politician they are or not. If they receive the Republican nod, that's the Republican's pick, that's who they're going to vote for. And how do they determine that? By what is promoted and put forth by the press, because that's where most people are getting their news from, and they believe what they hear. Listen, I used to be sold on Fox News. I believe in conservative principles, and I listened to Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, Bill. I swore by those guys. But it wasn't until I got involved and saw what was taking place behind the scenes and saw how Ron Paul was treated mm-hmm. that I finally opened my eyes and realized I left one plantation for another one.
But it is weird with all of this corrupt press support that if the press can steer us to elections, that they can't also steer us to approve of them once they're in office. We're going into the break. I'd be interested in your thoughts on that when we get back.
Sure.
T-Mod and I were talking about how the press is very geared up to getting us to vote for the same old jokers and clowns, these statists, sometimes with an R, sometimes with a D. But still, as Derek pointed out, when they get there, they have these really low approval ratings, which says to me that maybe there is something that we see as Americans, as voters, as the electorate, that is right, that is true, that there is some part of this illusion that we do see through, because if we didn't see through it, we would be approving of these people we keep voting for. So there seems to be a gap here, and I want to ask you, Derek, is that where the seed of hope lies, right? Is there something in our ability to understand what's being done to us that we can harness to kind of overcome this state corporate, political media axis that time and time again gets us to vote against the interests of ourselves and our country?
Sure. Here's the reason why we are in this paradigm that you just outlined. And I'll say this first. The only way to break this paradigm is people will have to turn off corporate media completely, because you can't trust corporate media. End of story. If it's owned by corporations that donate and contribute to PACs and super PACs, I'm sorry.
Right.
That's not going to happen. Now, why is it that they have low approval ratings? It's not the individuals that have the low approval ratings per se. It is the ability of Congress overall. Now, here is the rub. I call it my guy syndrome. Everybody that supports Kingston or Gingrich or Brown, in their mind, their guy is okay. Why? Because their guy is fighting for them in the minds of most blacks. Obama, their guy, is okay. It's Congress that's fighting against Obama, and that's why Obama can't get anything done. Nothing else matters. They can't see anything else. My guy syndrome, complete with a blind spot.
You know what, Derek? It's like, it's kind of like all politics are the politics of identity, right? You have a guy who you identify with, who's your team, and then he's the exception. Or the team he represents is the exception to the rule, right?
Yes.
The rule about the institution more generally or the political class more generally. It's kind of like that, right? It's teams.
Yep. That's it. And so this is why it is hard to get past and over that. So what did I start doing? I started telling people things that none of these guys are going to say. And basically it comes down to three things. I give them proof. Low-hanging fruit. So when I walk into the room and I stand up and I pass out a piece of paper that lists the House bill and number, the representatives that I'm running against that voted for it, and which of their constitutional protections that it violated, 98% of them say, I didn't know he did that.
Right.
You've given me something to think about because these things are not talked about in the press.
Now, is this, Derek, a cause for optimism? And what I mean is, if in 98% of cases people say, you know, I didn't know that, then what that really says is the problem is ignorance. And people, if they're made no longer ignorant, can be shocked out of this complacent paradigm. Maybe just the sharing of information is even more powerful than we realize.
Yes, you're exactly right. But now here comes here's where it becomes an uphill battle. We have a hashtag that we put out called Be the Media. I actually went into one of the debates, KSU. They made the mistake of doing an online poll of who won the debates. And when they saw that I won, they no longer do that poll anymore. They don't ask that question.
That does not fit the narrative, T-Mark.
No, it does not fit the narrative. And I said to them, people, what you have heard tonight, you will not see it in the press on tomorrow or leading up to the next debate. It is up to you to pass it on to your family and friends. If you sit on the information and don't pass it on, even though you may have decided to vote for me, you have helped us to lose the battle because you didn't take it past where you found it.
Right.
Now, the other part of our problem, we can be the media and we can wake people up by simply telling them the truth about the folk that have been representing them. And that's not a problem. We can do that. Because when you sit down and meet people where they are, and I'll talk about how I address black people when I finish this, you'd be surprised at who we can wake up. Now, what is the biggest problem? I keep telling folk, if you send me to D.C., I'm going to name names. Why? So that the American people can take out the trash, because that's where the power lies. It lies with the voters. And if I name the names, you now know who to target when you proceed to firing the people that are violating your civil liberties.
You know what, Derek? Just let me say that that's really interesting to hear you say that, because something I'm very aware of in the liberty movement, American libertarianism in particular, has a deep and cherished skepticism of, quite right, but a skepticism of democracy. But you have rightly identified, and I say rightly because history teaches this, that when it comes to an overreach of tyranny, the reaction from the culture that increases liberty, you know, that moves the ratchet back in the right direction, is essentially a demos kratos, power of people action. That you said, you know, that's where the power lies. And I think that maybe we in the liberty movement, as we rise and we try and become more mainstream and actually return this country to the Constitution in the minds of the mainstream voter, is we need to respect that. We need to realize that it isn't just going to be us. It's going to be the people who maybe heretofore weren't that interested in politics being brought along with us.
Exactly. And that's why I keep telling people, first, you got to send me to Washington, and I say, and when you send me, I say this in my closing statement, I want you to tell those in D.C. that I'm coming, and I'm bringing the American people with me, and 100% of the Constitution, 100% of the time. Because I'm going to need the people to fire the folk right. in D.C. Right. that are destroying this country. I can't do it by myself. And folks say, well, Derek, don't you need to go up there to work with them? No, I don't. I need to go up there to represent and protect the rights of the states and the will of the people. I need to expose those that violate it. That is my job, to protect my state, to protect the will of the people. That's my job. That's mm-hmm. my only job, not to be friends with folk that want to violate those. So I will not compromise on those issues. Mm-hmm. But let me get to another important point in this process in order to make this complete. This is another ugly side that people don't want to acknowledge. Now, when Ron Paul was running, it was all 100% integrity, 100% this, 100% that. Since Ron Paul has retired, people have gotten back to a lesser of two evils mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Lesser of evils. Well, Ron Paul's not. Whatever happened to demanding 100% of the Constitution 100% of the time? And that is why I will not let go of it, and that is why I'm holding on to it. The other dangerous part that I bring to the forefront that people are not have not recognized, these folk that we think in D.C. are representing us and fighting for us, how can they be fighting for us when they don't name those that are complicit in violating our civil liberties and freedoms?
Yeah,
they
I
don't.
Hear
you. Now, they don't.
You know, I like this neat little slogan, if I may call it that, 100% of the Constitution, 100% of the time, because you know what? Isn't that what the oath is, that every one of them up on that hill swears? And isn't that a matter of basic integrity? Once you swear an oath, then it's your integrity on the line, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, you mentioned that you would speak a little bit about the black community and messaging in the black community. And you also spoke a little bit about protecting the states and the people that you represent of your state and the rights of the states. And I've heard you briefly talk about the 10th Amendment in some of your videos online, which I think is, you know, it's one of the most kind of beautiful things about the way that this country was built by the, you know, the genius of the founders. Now, I come from the outside, and I don't have the cultural baggage. You know, when I think and talk about the 10th Amendment, I've been educating myself since I arrived in the States a few years ago, and it seems like, as I say, a part of an ingenious way of building a nation. You know, this idea of divided government and the 50 laboratories of government, etc., etc. But it's very hard to talk about it here without people going, oh, slavery, you know, or, you know, all the things that are kind of hung on it. So maybe that provides an interesting way into what you were going to talk about with respect to messaging in the black community.
Sure. Now, one thing I want to point out, there are people within the power structure in the black community that have been given power over the people, and they want to keep it that way. So, and if you give me an email address, I'm going to want to send you something that I sent out to black churches. But let me set it up. I'm invited to a function in a black community hosted by this black church here in Atlanta, and they tell me it's okay if I give out my literature. So I give out my literature while I'm there, and a gentleman by the name of I forget his last name, but he was involved in civil rights here in Atlanta. He came into the green room with my push card balled up in his hand, and he asked, who's passing these out? And I said, I am. And he said, well, it's got to stop. I can't allow you to pass these out here. And I say, sir, I'll stop passing them out. I said, but I was given permission, and I'll leave if you want me to. He said, no, I don't want you to leave. I just don't want you passing this out. And I said, so let me get this straight, just to make sure I understand. You want me to say, you still want me to speak, but you don't want me to pass these out. He said, that's right, because we have to protect our message. I say, so to just to clarify, you don't want me to take my push card and pass it out to the people here in this facility so that they will have the ability to choose to take it and keep it or leave it where they find it or have the information to maybe make different decisions. And he said, no, I don't.
What was it on that paper that was that offended his sensibilities? What was it that he didn't want said or, you know, handed out?
I'm pro Second Amendment, and I want Obamacare repealed.
They were the two things?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
So let's talk. So talk more broadly about what it takes to, you know, what the blocks are, because it seems at some level that communities have to be, or certainly the leadership of from within the community have to be kind of complicit with the illusion that's being sent into that community from the outside, right?
Exactly.
So how does that play out, and how do you break that, Derek?
Well, I reached out to also, just one other one, I reached out to the concerned black clergy with my concerns and my proposal to them, and I told them I would like to meet with your group because I want to talk to them about talking to their parishioners. This is how Martin Luther King was able to become successful, because he went into the churches where black people gathered. And I say this is one of the reasons why Lyndon Johnson expanded the 501c3 to churches, because he put blocks on them if they take that tax exempt status, and that means no politicking in the church. And a lot of people don't know that and don't realize that, but that's what that was all about. So I said to them, I won't ask for donations and I won't ask anybody to vote for me. What I want to do is ask them a question. With all this black leadership that we have, even now a black president, why hasn't black-on-black crime gone down? It hasn't. It's gotten worse. Why aren't our schools better than what they used to be? They aren't. They're getting worse. The cheating scandal in Atlanta, the school board chairman being indicted for racketeering, black people in charge. Why hasn't anybody done anything about the war on drugs, which disproportionately targets blacks and other minorities and poor whites? Why hasn't anything been done to address the manufacturing of inmates for our prison industrial complex? None of these things have gotten better, but we have cities like Detroit, Chicago, Atlanta, Decatur, black mayors, black judges, black police chiefs, black everything. Yet none of these things have gotten better. We need to start asking questions and maybe do like Chicago or Detroit, start doing something different, like maybe voting these people out of office. And they never return my call. But when I talk to groups of black people, as wherever I go, when I meet them there in those areas where they know what I'm talking about is the truth, I have nothing but amens and agrees, and I tell them, look, you can vote for me in the primary and you can still remain a Democrat. So I've got a number of black people that are going to go and vote for me. Now, I've modified my push cards for the black community, and I'm focusing on just those issues that I know are important to them. But those are things that they can't deny. And it's like when I talk to white folks, I said gun control is not about criminals.
Yeah.
Crooks are crooks. I say gun control is about taking guns from the largest group of people who own most of the guns legally. And who are they? Middle-class white Americans. And y'all can look at it however you want to, but those are whose guns they're coming after. Assault weapons, high-capacity magazines. You can call it how you want, but that is the nature of what it is. But these are things underneath the covers that if you meet people there, where they can relate to what you're talking about, you get their attention.
Okay, Derek, that's great. We're at the end of this segment. We'll be back again shortly.
We'll be right back.
hasn't that gone quickly? I knew getting T-Mod on the show would be a good idea. T-Mod, I wish you all the luck with spreading your message and with your run for office. You've got just about 3 minutes left in the show, and I want to hand that to you to say whatever you want to say to your potential constituents in the nation, and tell us how we can find out about what you're doing, what you believe, and if we want to contribute to your efforts, how we do that.
Sure. Robin, let me just first say thank you again for having me on the show.
My pleasure.
I had expressed off the air that if our team, Team Grayson, had the exposure throughout the state of Georgia, there would be no doubt in my mind that we would win this election hands down, because we bring enlightenment in the rooms that we go in. And I will guarantee you that your listeners, there are some who have had a light bulb to come on the things that I've talked about. I encourage them to go to TMOT of Georgia, TMOTOFGA on YouTube, and go to my main channel page and click videos and scroll through those videos, and they will find topics along with the debates that I've participated in thus far. I even broke them up where just my questions, so it's an easy listen, and learn about what's going on with the political process and the corruption within and the complicitness of the press. If we had people like you, Robin, if there were 100 of you here in Georgia, I believe we'd also win. What we lack here in Georgia is free press, and that is the biggest problem. The silver lining in all of this is the people that I have touched and have awakened and given them something to think about, they will be soldiers for us whenever we run again if we happen to not win this particular battle.
We've got 10 seconds left. What is your website, Derek?
Grayson2014.com. You can support us. You may not be able to vote for us, but you can donate.
That's great, Derek. That's the end of our show, and it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times, WGRR Digital.